And thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star one on your phone to ask a question. I would like to inform all parties that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Ms. Jeannie Lyons. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Vanessa, and good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeannie Lyons, as she just said, and I am with NOAA Public Affairs. I want to start by thanking you for joining us on this call today. We're here to announce the first major phase of one of the largest strategies ever proposed for coral reef restoration. And to explain the news we're releasing today, I have the honor of introducing our speakers. First, we have Sarah Fangman. Sarah is the superintendent of the Florida Keys National Marine Sanctuary here within NOAA's National Ocean Service. Next, we have Michael Crosby, president and CEO of Moat Marine Laboratory and Aquarium. And we'll also hear from Scott Winters, CEO of the Coral Reef Foundation. We also have some other experts on hand to answer your questions. They are Tom Moore with NOAA's Coral Reef Restoration. He's the team lead of that group, and Jennifer Koss, director of NOAA's Coral Reef Conservation Program. You can find specific name, spellings, and title information for our experts on the media advisory posted at NOAA.gov. Just a reminder that this call is for working media only, and if you're not a member of the press, you are welcome to listen, but please do not ask questions. This time is really reserved for reporters. And with that, I'm going to turn the floor over to Sarah. Sarah, please go ahead.
Thank you, Jeannie. And thank you, everyone, for joining us this afternoon. We sincerely appreciate your time and interest in this ambitious $100 million restoration effort that we refer to as Mission Iconic Reefs. Mission Iconic Reefs is a first-of-its-kind, large-scale restoration effort to restore 7 iconic reef sites in the Florida Keys National Marine Sanctuary. Here we are just 2 days shy of Earth Day. We feel it's an appropriate topic for this year's theme, Restore Our Earth. I'm with the Office of National Marine Sanctuaries, but I want to recognize that there are several other NOAA offices supporting this effort, and of course, scores of partners. So it really is a village coming together to raise our reefs to their previous glory. Now, Florida's been at the forefront of reef restoration, but unfortunately, our work has not been able to keep pace with declines. So in December of 2019, we launched Mission Iconic Reefs, which is the most ambitious effort to date in the United States to restore nearly 3 million square feet of the Florida reef tract, which if you're like me, 3 million square feet is a number that's hard to picture. So that's about the size of 52 football fields. I want to quickly highlight 3 elements that make Mission Iconic Reefs an unprecedented initiative. They are scale, collaboration, and complexity. So first, scale. Mission Iconic Reefs identified 7 sites spanning the Keys from Key West to Key Largo. Today, we're here to talk about an area off Key West called Eastern Dry Rocks, where all of our previous work was done sort of on a micro scale, is now being applied at the macro level for the first time. We are going to be outplanting 60,000 elkhorn and staghorn corals over a 9-acre area at one of the most important ecological and economic sites in the Keys. If any of you are one of the millions of visitors who come to Key West each year, went out on a snorkel trip, there's a really good chance you were swimming at Eastern Dry Rocks. Second is collaboration. Participants in this mission have been the leaders and innovators, and they have done heroic work in restoration. They've been developing techniques and implementing impressive restoration efforts in the Keys. Recognizing that corals of the future will still have to deal with a variety of threats, this effort will rely initially on rapidly growing species of corals that are not susceptible to stony coral tissue loss disease. And we will focus on resilient corals of those species that are susceptible to stony coral tissue loss disease. You're going to hear more about this from our colleagues who have extensive experience and infrastructure to support this effort, so I'll let them speak to that. Lastly, complexity. New techniques are being applied before, during, and after the outplanting of these 60,000 corals. At Eastern Dry Rocks, we have already started by clearing the seafloor of nuisance species that can inhibit coral growth. And beginning later this year, students and faculty of the College of the Florida Keys will begin testing the reintroduction of Caribbean king crabs, which are an important herbivore that serve as natural grazers to help sustain a healthy ecosystem. Other partners are developing techniques to rear another important herbivore, the long-spined black sea urchin, which prior to 1982 were one of the most important grazers on these reefs, but unfortunately their population collapsed and the natural recovery to date has been pretty minimal in Florida. Of course, all this has a price tag. The work at Eastern Dry Rocks is being funded by a $5 million grant from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, which was secured by the National Marine Sanctuary Foundation, along with Moat Marine Laboratory and the Coral Restoration Foundation. Just as this project is being operated as a public-private partnership, it is being paid for as a public-private partnership. And our Sanctuary Foundation and other nonprofits are working to secure funds, and NOAA is also contributing funds to this. We are less than 10% of the way through this 20-year project, but we've already secured more than 10% of the needed funding. So we're really pleased with the commitments we have to date and look forward to continued investments as we work towards these goals. So again, scale, collaboration, complexity. Again, Mission Iconic Reefs was launched in December 2019, and at that time we estimated coral cover at the seven sites was around 2%. We hope to get that closer to 25% in the next 15 years. Now I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Michael Crosby, who is the CEO of Moat Marine Lab. Dr. Crosby?
Well, thank you very much, Sarah. Good afternoon to everyone. Thanks for the opportunity to talk to you about this critical initiative. Very quickly, for those of you that may not be familiar with Moat Marine Laboratory, it's a completely independent nonprofit research institution that has been conducting work around the world for 66 years. But we have six campuses in the state of Florida, four of which are in the Florida Keys, where we've been conducting work for decades, studying issues that are facing coral reefs, such as increasing ocean temperature, decreasing pH, and coral disease, while at the same time using very innovative research strategies that have really changed the paradigm of coral restoration science to the point that we are now able to use them to bring Florida's coral reef back from the brink of functional extinction. We've already planted here in the Keys over 100,000 coral fragments out onto the reef, and our expertise in genetic resiliency is increasingly important for the long-term survival of these corals as part of Mission Iconic Reef. Increasing the genetic diversity and increasing survival rates of over 90% in the first year. Since 2016, we planted over 7,000 fragments covering nearly 75 genotypes on Eastern Dry Rock, even before Mission Iconic Reef had started. And in 2020, we monitored these outplantings where we saw an 850 to 950% increase in the live total linear extension of these corals, and many of them were also sexually mature. So this is great, great hope for the future of Mission Iconic Reefs. In the next 3 years, we'll be planting 24,000 fragments of elkhorn and 10,000 fragments of staghorn out on Eastern Dry Rocks. And given the really dire status of wild elkhorn colonies in the Lower Keys, less than 30 genotypes in total, the expertise in sexual reproduction of these corals and genetic diversity is really important to the foundational success that we hope to achieve with this initiative. Through our past coral reproduction efforts, we produced hundreds of new genotypes, and these will eventually be put out on Eastern Dry Rocks. And beyond our efforts in Eastern Dry Rocks, every year, Moat is creating hundreds of new genotypes of both the branching and the slower growing species of coral. And while we're really ramping up our efforts at Eastern Dry Rocks, as Sarah mentioned, and in fact today we're out there planting actively, we're also preparing for other restoration at the other iconic reef sites. In fact, today I'm talking to you from our newest land-based nursery at Bud and Mary's Marina in Isle Mirada, where we'll be able to focus on one of the other iconic reefs in the future, Chica Rocks. All of this really is to say Moog Marine Laboratory is fully committed to the long-term goals of Mission Iconic Reefs, and we know that science-based restoration efforts can bring these reefs back from the brink of functional extinction. We also know that genetic diversity and resiliency traits must be worked into the restoration pipeline, and that is really what our role is in Mission Iconic Reefs. And very importantly, we know that failure is not an option for Mission Iconic Reefs. And so we're thrilled to be working with NOAA and our other partners to ensure that this vital, vital initiative is in fact successful. Thanks. I think now I'm going to turn it over to Scott.
Hi. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate it. And thank you, everyone, for having me today. I'm Dr. Scott Winters, CEO of the Coral Restoration Foundation. The Coral Restoration Foundation is the world's largest nonprofit dedicated to restoring coral reefs. And we're excited to be part of Mission Iconic Reefs and this amazing endeavor we're undertaking as a community. Mission Iconic Reefs and the work being done at Eastern Dry Rocks in particular is the culmination of many years of hard work, effort, and vision by NOAA, the Florida Keys National Marine Sanctuary, and countless community partners. We at the Coral Restoration Foundation are based and have been working in the Florida Keys since 2007. During that time, we've seen our reefs degrade. But more importantly, we've seen hope. Hope for the corals, hope for our coral reefs, and hope for our communities. The grant from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation for coral reef restoration at Eastern Dry Rocks is an investment in conservation, our natural resources, and our community. This grant, which represents a public-private partnership, as Sarah mentioned, will bring additional resources into the Florida Keys for restoration. Moreover, it represents a large-scale collaborative effort between government agencies, academics, restoration practitioners, and the local community. And this, I think, is a really important point. Mission Iconic Reefs is about more than just reef restoration. It's about building socioeconomic resiliency in our communities that rely on coral reefs. So thank you for joining us today at the start of this journey.
Thank you all so much. At this time, we will open for reporter questions. Vanessa, can you please explain the process for asking a question?
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1, unmute your phone. If you need to withdraw your question, press star 2. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. It will take a few moments for the questions to come through. Thank you.
Our first question comes from Greg Allen at NPR. Greg, we are opening up your mic. There we go. You're live.
I wonder if, for descriptive purposes, if one or more of you could talk a little bit about what we've seen, how the decline has played out on the reefs over the last few decades. What was it like 40 years ago versus what it's like now? For people who don't follow this story, what's the state of them today compared to what they should be?
Well, this is Dr. Crosby. I'll be happy to jump in and give you some context here. I was born in Florida, and I lived in Key West as a little boy. And at that time, the living coral cover down here in the Keys was on the order of about 60%. That's 60%. I'm not retired, so that'll give you a feel for the number of decades that have gone by. But we have seen a decline from 60% down, as the superintendent said, in some areas here in Mission Iconic Reef sites, 2 to 5%. And what that means is the coral reef itself, the corals, have dropped below the density levels that are required to be able to maintain themselves, to continue to reproduce and maintain a healthy reef. They are sliding into functional extinction right before our eyes. And without Mission Iconic Reef, they're gone. We must succeed. We must bring them back. And I think through the innovative science and the genetic resiliency work, the great partnerships that we have, this is going to be a successful initiative. And we're going to hit those benchmarks of bringing corals back to be a naturally self-sustaining ecosystem and put us all out of a restoration job.
I don't see anyone else in line for questions right now. So just a reminder, star one, if you'd like to ask a question. This is your time with the experts, so please make good use of it.
So, Jenny, if I can add on to what Dr. Crosby said. Greg, thank you for that question. The speakers and the panel today are all seasoned divers and coral enthusiasts. And so we can all tell stories similar to what Dr. Crosby so eloquently stated regarding seeing during our careers changes on reefs, not just here in Florida, but worldwide. And some of my colleagues have heard me say something that really, you would expect that, right? With people who have been diving on reefs for decades, you would expect that we would have witnessed some change. But what really hits home to me as the superintendent of the Florida Keys National Marine Sanctuary is when I hear new divers articulating their experiences observing these reefs declining. People who have just been diving for a few years can see the changes that are happening on our reefs before our very eyes. And that is what really drives me to try to push as hard as we can to succeed with this mission, because it's not okay that we have young people who are beginning divers who can also bear witness to that decline. And I have said many times before, my hope is that those young divers are going to bear witness, and when they're my age, they're going to be telling the story of how they witnessed these corals coming back.
Thanks, Sarah. Our next question comes from Tim O'Hara at the Key West Citizen newspaper. Tim, your line is open.
I would like to ask the question is, you know, I know this is done being done by NOAA, but and there has been some partnerships with FWC, but, you know, has there been enough funding and awareness and regulation given to the water quality issue that's going to be needed to maintain these corals once they, you know, grow, become bigger? So in another, let's say, 20, 50, 100 years, you know, another group of administrators and reporters aren't having the same concern and having another, you know, let's say $100 million project given to that. So is, you know, how is the state, how is the sanctuary dealing with the water quality issue, which many believe it is really a critical issue to the survival and health of coral reefs in the Florida Keys?
Hello, Tim. Sarah here. I'll go ahead and start. So with regard to water quality, as you know, being down here, a very, very important issue that people in this community are raise their voices on, and definitely has a role to play in where we are today in regard to the condition of our corals. And so far as the sanctuary is concerned, and I know you were just on our Sanctuary Advisory Council call because I saw you on our meeting. As you know, we are working through that mechanism to try to engage with the state and some of the larger regional issues to address water quality. And so my comment in response to your question would be that water quality is a critical issue that we must address simultaneous to this effort. We cannot wait until our water quality challenges are all tidied up and addressed. We need to do that and address coral restoration. So I'll stop there and see if any of my colleagues want to add to that.
Yes, this is Scott Winters from the Coral Restoration Foundation. I'd like to add to that, if I might. I defer to Sarah to talk about the water quality issue in the Keys, but I do think it's really important to recognize that the reason the reefs have degraded in the Florida reef tract is not simply because of poor water quality. It's been a number of small factors adding up over the last 40 years, which diminished population, as Dr. Crosby mentioned. If it were simply water quality or simply a regional issue, then we wouldn't be able to grow corals to be thriving and healthy in our offshore nurseries, which we've been able to do for the last 10 years. So we know that we can overcome this, even as we work on other more regional challenges, because we see the evidence in the last 10 years of being able to grow corals that not only are healthy and thrive, but when they're outplanted back onto the reef, you know, grow and ultimately spawn.
Thank you both. A reminder to press star one to get in line to ask a question. Please do that. We hope you'll use that function. And our next question comes again from Greg Allen at NPR.
Yeah, just to kind of follow up on the last question, actually the first two questions. This seems to be, in some ways, I know that there's been a lot of work done on this in the last decade to show that you can propagate corals and you can transplant them and create healthy corals. But in terms of the project you're talking about, it's so unprecedented that it seems like that it's kind of like a very large experiment. I mean, what kind of reason do you have to hope that long-term you can actually bring these reefs back to something close to, you know, to what you're talking about and where they'll be able to be maintained in the face of water quality and other pressures that are not likely to go away?
Well, this is Dr. Crosby. I'll jump in real quick on this and try to link those two parts of your question together. It's not a matter of hope, and it's not a matter of can we do it. We've demonstrated that we can, in fact, identify resilient genotypes of corals that are resilient to what killed them in the first place, which is increasing ocean temperature, decreasing pH, and especially this stony coral tissue loss disease. Water quality, I'll say a little bit of heresy here. Water quality is one of the big things that led us over the decades to the detrimental conditions that we're in now, that the corals are so stressed they can't survive any of these other insults. But water quality in Monroe County, anyhow, has improved dramatically during the last few decades, and I think Scott had alluded to that. And we have demonstrated, we have outplanted resilient genotypes 5 years ago of a very slow-growing coral here in the Keys that survived two coral bleaching events, a hurricane, and stony tissue loss disease. And it has grown in 5 years to the size of a 20 to 40-year-old coral, so it's sexually mature, and it can reproduce on its own. And that's the key, is ensuring that the density grid that we're transplanting corals out into allows these coral, especially during the sexual propagation phase of their life cycle, are actually close enough that the gametes meet, they fertilize, they settle, and they become new coral. So, yeah, everything that we do is predicated on a grand experimental design to test different hypotheses, But we are sure that we can do this. We've demonstrated we can do this. It's just the scale and the level of partnerships here goes beyond anything that has been done before, and it's a bold initiative that is exactly what is needed.
This is Tom Moore with NOAA. I'll follow up on that as well. So, you know, a lot of our work over the last 15 years, both in Florida and beyond, has tremendously demonstrated that we can succeed at the local level with restoration. The difference has been getting to that ecosystem level, and the gap between success at the local level and the gap between success at the ecosystem level isn't just big, it's a massive gap. And so a few years ago, we sat down with experts from the Smithsonian Institution to talk about how we bring species back from the brink in the face of some of the issues that both Tim and Greg, you guys have talked about here in terms of water quality and climate change. And what they told us was that to truly recover coral reefs, that we needed to think backwards of traditional conservation thinking. You see, normally you're taught that to solve these problems, you first deal with the underlying issue, in this case, water quality, and as Dr. Crosby said, we've been working hard on that front, or climate change. And in this case, what they told us was that we needed to actually go backwards from those traditional conservation thinking, that what they prescribed was that we needed to immediately begin to aggressively rebuild our populations with diverse and resilient corals, that we needed to think more aggressively and bigger than we would ever think would normally be necessary, and that we needed to do this while also working in the background on these other issues. They explained to me that if we waited to deal with these other issues, that we would be simply left with an ecosystem that was not able to be restored. And so that is why we're taking these aggressive approaches now as part of Mission Iconic Reefs to move from these local successes to try to get ourselves to ecosystem successes.
Thank you both. A reminder to press star one to ask a question. That's star and then one. I'm not showing any other questions in the queue right now. And as we give you a chance to kind of formulate anything else you might want to ask while you have the experts on the line, I want to give Jennifer Koss, Director of NOAA's Coral Reef Conservation Program, who hasn't chimed in yet, a chance to highlight anything she'd like to as we wait for you to formulate those questions. Jen?
Thank you, Jenny. This is Jennifer Koss, Director of NOAA's Coral Reef Conservation Program. I'd just like to add that we've known for a long time that recovering corals was an all-hands-on-deck scenario, and I really think that innovative partnerships like we're seeing with Mission Iconic Reefs involving local and federal government, NGOs, academia, citizen scientists, and a myriad of other partners is a real testament to learning from each other about resilience, recovery, and restoration, and the time is now to do this.
Thank you. And I see Greg Allen from NPR. We're opening up your line now, and I'm so glad you have questions.
Right.
Go ahead.
I think I just one more. And can one or more of you kind of give us a sense on why on the impact, why we should care about the reefs? I mean, I live in Florida. I'm familiar with them. But I think a lot of people just think of them as something that's out there underwater and that, you know, they're nice. But, you know, I'd like to have someone address both the environmental and also the economic value of them, if someone could do that for me, please.
Well, I'll take a quick crack at it. This is Dr. C again. You're looking at well over 70,000 jobs dependent on this coral reef track down here in the Keys. You're looking at Mother Nature's front line of defense in coastal resiliency that would cost billions of dollars to build if you could build it. You're talking about the basis of an economy that is billions of dollars a year. And you're talking about something that is the foundational basis of the culture here in the Keys. And if you don't care about any of that, while you're breathing right now, 50 to 70% of the oxygen that you're breathing is coming from the ocean. And if you want to continue to breathe that oxygen, you need a good, healthy ocean. And in order to have a good, healthy ocean, you need a good, healthy rainforest of the sea, which is our coral reef. So pick one of those reasons, and I'm sure you can find a reason to get behind Mission Iconic Reefs.
Our next question comes from Tim O'Hara at the Key West Citizen newspaper.
Yeah, thanks for letting me have a second question. I promised I wouldn't put myself or put anyone on the spot, but given the lack of questions, I feel I need to ask this question because it actually came up in the Sanctuary Advisory Council meeting earlier today, and that is the issue of cruise ships and turbidity and their impact on coral reefs. Obviously, the reef we're talking about today is off Key West Harbor. I'd like to ask any of you or all of you, how do you feel, is there any strong science that shows turbidity and those impacts on coral reefs in the Florida Keys from cruise ships? And then if so, how do you guys feel that the city of Key West had a vote limiting the size of cruise ships, and now the state of Florida is seeking to reverse that by preempting their authority on regulating cruise ships.
You know I'm happy to answer this one, but I've been hogging the answer. So anybody else want to jump in and take that?
If not, go ahead and start.
Okay. There's no question. I mean, it's a good question, and it's a good dialogue for the community to have. There's no question. Science shows that turbidity is bad for coral. Okay, so that's a given. I don't think there's any debate about that. I think the issue is one that is more of the scale of impact of cruise ships and the turbidity that they inevitably create, and how localized the impact is versus the wider range of impacts. And that's something that of course, the community needs to deal with and to make some decisions about, as well as the state and federal government. But when you look at the entire coral reef tract, I would suggest that there are much more significant threats that we must deal with. And I think Mission Iconic Reef, by using an approach that is founded on science, genetic resiliency, increasing both species and habitat diversity, as well as genetic diversity, that is really dealing with the primary forcing functions that have caused our coral reefs to slip into functional extinction. That's not to lessen the importance of a discussion around cruise ships, but in the suite of impacts to the entire coral reef tract, that is one that is not as significant on a regional scale as many others.
And I want to follow up on that. This is Tom Moore with NOAA. I think Dr. Crosby gave an excellent answer about the impacts of cruise ships and the impacts of turbidity in general on coral reefs. And I think it's important as we look at Mission Iconic Reefs to recognize that we're not restoring these sites to create museums. We're restoring these sites to create balanced community use for all of the users within the Florida Keys. Many of the sites that we picked to be part of Mission Iconic Reefs are there because of the use that comes from the community and the use that comes from our visitors. Eastern Dry Rocks in particular, the site we're talking about today, is one of the sites that sees tens of thousands of cruise ship passengers and other visitors to Key West sea coral reefs for the first time. And that's one of the reasons we want to restore this site, so those people that visit the Keys can have the opportunity to see the reefs that Dr. Crosby talked about seeing as a boy, and the reefs that we hope many of our kids will be able to see in the future. We're not restoring these places just to create areas that people could look at from afar, but reefs that people can truly interact with and have an opportunity to enjoy.
Thank you both. There are no other questions in the queue right now. Star one, and as we wait to just see if there's anyone else who would like to ask a question, I want to note that folks interested in supporting this effort, this would probably be a good note for your readers, can do so by supporting our partners directly at the Coral Restoration Foundation, Moat Marine Laboratory, and the National Marine Sanctuary Foundation. Our next question comes from Lena, a freelance journalist. We are opening up your line. Go ahead.
Hi, everyone. This may not be a direct question about the coral reefs, but it sort of relates to. For the past 10 years, actually, I think more than 10 years, there was an invasive species sort of spreading very fast around Florida and other areas, the lionfish, the infamous lionfish, which was, it still is, you know, decimating the populations of the coral reefs, and, you know, everything is connected in nature. So I'm curious if there are any, you know, plans and this, you know, new effort to somehow battle lionfish, because so far it has been really difficult. Thank you.
So this is Sarah. I will jump in on that. So Mission Iconic Reefs explicitly doesn't speak to or engage in lionfish removal necessarily. That said, there are definitely lionfish removal efforts underway in the Florida Keys because, as you know, they are a pretty voracious predator and have the capacity to significantly alter the natural community on the reefs where they are found. And so there are removal efforts going on here in the sanctuary, as well as testing of new technologies, because one of the challenges we're finding is that they are in large numbers in deeper parts of the sanctuary and deeper waters where divers don't typically go and therefore can remove them. So we're looking at new technologies to address some of those lionfish found in the deeper waters using new trap technologies, et cetera.
This is Tom. I'll add that the work that we're doing as part of Mission Iconic Reefs to Restore the Reefs is just as much about restoring the corals to the system as it is helping restore fisheries as well. These coral reefs promote robust, they are a robust habitat for many coral reef fishes, including those that are heavily affected by lionfish. And so one of the reasons we're working so hard is to really get the full suite of ecosystem benefits from this project.
I see no other questions. So star one, sort of last call for questions. And as we do that, I want to ask our speakers if any of the five of you have anything else that you would like to add that maybe we haven't touched on or that you really want to highlight before we close out the call.
Yeah, this is Scott Winters from Coral Restoration Foundation. I want to go back to one of my opening statements, and that Mission Iconic Reef is a critical and important aspect of restoration and saving our coral reefs. But through that, it's also about helping and supporting our local communities and using conservation and restoration to help build economic resiliency into our local communities that rely on them.
And Jen, I believe, did you want to add anything else before we close out?
Just a couple things, and that is to say there's a bill to reauthorize the Coral Reef Conservation Act that is gaining a lot of attention in the House. It passed the Senate last session, so we're looking at some new authorities that would expand our efforts to do restoration projects like Mission Iconic Reef, and just really wanted to stress the importance of taking on something like Mission Iconic Reefs at the scale that we're doing it. This is the first time in the United States that we've certainly tried anything like this, and I think it's probably first of its kind globally as well. And the importance of having restoration and an overall conservation plan that also deals with those threats that we talked about, water quality, warming waters, more acidified waters, pressures from unsustainable fishing, that restoration is the necessary bookend to recover those species.
And this is Sarah. I feel compelled to offer, too, that coral restoration is a very, very important initiative that the Florida Keys National Marine Sanctuary is supporting and engaging in, but it is not the only thing we're doing on behalf of this ecosystem, which is challenged on a number of fronts, and we've talked about that throughout this conversation. And so I just want to make it clear that we have a lot of other initiatives underway to help this whole system be stronger and more resilient and resistant to some of the threats that we experience down here. And so, our restoration blueprint, for example, is a multi-year effort to address a number of challenges to our reef system. And we are, as been discussed before, trying to address water quality issues, et cetera. So restoration is very, very important to us, along with a number of other actions that we continue to work on and continue to take with this community to try to help this whole system be more resilient.
Thank you all so much. Thank you, everyone of our speakers and everyone for joining this call. The press release is available on NOAA.gov. NOAA.gov, and was sent to your news teams today. And through links in that release, you can access photos and videos and websites with even more information on this. And on the release, you'll find my contact information and that of my public affairs colleagues, both at MOAT and the Coral Restoration Foundation. If you have any trouble finding those, or if you have any other questions as you're pulling together your stories, please reach out to me at Jenny, J-E-N-N-I-E, Lyons, L-Y-O-N-S, at NOAA, N-O-A-A.gov, with your inquiry and the deadline that you're working with. Again, that's Jenny with an I-E, J-E-N-N-I-E, Lyons, L-Y-O-N-S, at NOAA.gov. You can also reach me by phone at 202-603-9372. That's 202-603-9372. And with that, we will go ahead and close this call. Thank you all for your time.
That concludes today's conference. You may disconnect at this time. Host, please stand by for your line count.